Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The racetrack. Join the excitement of race.
You in the winner's circle. Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Call it the second half, about an hour and 10, or make that an hour, actually, now that I look up. And Dick Powell's going to join us here momentarily. And as we look toward having Dick join us, I want to give you the details. Duke of Love, nearly wire to wire. Justin Stein, prominent throughout, basically stalking Ironstone, who ended up going off favored. And the situation, Sir for sure, and Declan Carroll. Declan got dropped. Sir for sure was the second choice. Actually, just over the, just about the third choice. Actually, Duke of Love, 255, and Sir for sure, 265, and so that kind of, you know, kind of marred the whole undertaking. But Duke of Love was very good, and wins the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown. This a My Racehorse product. Everybody was all excited. Bred by Caldara Farm, Patrick Costello and David Whitford and Tom Zweisler, Ontario, obviously. This a Cupid, and out of a Smart Strike mare. So Duke of Love, Josie Carroll, does nice job. So there's your second leg of the Triple Crown in Canada. Look toward the Breeders next, the mile and a half on the grass. And, of course, what's always interesting about the Canadian Triple Crown is you get three surfaces. It's such a unique configuration between Woodbine's main track, a mile and a quarter on the synthetic, and then the mile and 3/16 at Fort Erie on the dirt, and then back for the mile and a half, same distances as the American Triple Crown, but three different surfaces, which is a great test. And, of course, even in the era since the synthetic came to Woodbine, you've had your shares of Triple Crown winners.
That would make the truest champion to me, right? If you're racing on all three surfaces, three distances, you're probably going to come up with the best horse at the end. There'll be no dispute.
There was also, you know, that Rondo, I should mention the Rondo Bay as well. Pleasure's Gold beat the even money Super Flashy. Tino Attard beating Kevin Attard. And as we always say, when an Attard is on the show, you can't tell an Attard without a program.
That's for sure.
too many of them. This the Licorice family, Elizabeth and Gordon Licorice, homebred of theirs, and actually both the 1-2 finishers, both super speedies. But you got a nice 1480 for Pleasure's Gold winning the $100,000 Rondo Bay yesterday, the not a co-feature. Dick Powell is standing by. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning. Well, we just missed our pick three this morning. We won the first leg, we won the last leg, and we got photoed in the middle leg. So, life continues.
Well, then maybe we're probably better off that we didn't get to you at 9:30.
Except we would add some excitement, you know. A
couple of winners. There you go.
Yeah, we were right there in the seventh race. I singled the eight, and he had a little traffic. Today's been one of those days. If you're wide and clear, you're okay. Saving ground doesn't always help. So you've seen horses come over the top and get up in time, even with the short stretch at Happy Valley. But it's good to be back at Happy Valley, and a nice mix of winners and long shots and the usual suspects. So, yeah.
Let's actually, Dick, bring it back to the weekend. I mean, this has been a busy, intense couple of weeks between literally from Travers onward. You know, we've been kind of the line drives have been coming at us. Talk first of all about the weekend pass, the opening session at Sha-Tin.
Yeah, Sha-Tin opened up early Sunday morning, East Coast time. Started out kind of formful. Zach won two of the first three races on favorites. And then as the the day went on, we got to see price after price. Get my notes. Eighth race paid $15. Ninth race paid $78, and the last race paid $104. So they kind of gave you a nice mix of 4 out of 10 favorites, but some big bombs mixed in to an average win price of $26. And Zach started out with 3 wins. Joe did not ride. Joe did not ride today. He is expected to ride this Sunday morning, so he should be back. And, you know, with 88 day meet, you could be 10 and 20 ahead, and this lot can happen. So it's not terribly significant, but Zach's is off to a good start. And we're seeing some of the other guys. Lyle Hewittson continues to win races for Doug White. We saw that all last year, 20-something times they combined for winners. That combination already hit today. And the turf was a little slow at Sha-Tin, a little bit slower than standard times. Today, Happy Valley, a couple of races faster, so depending on the pace, but they were running down on the rail, so going pretty quick in most of the races.
All right. Well, the Happy Valley. Let me pull up the. Because I did not. We're trying to get squared away here, so I did not keep an eye on what went on today thus far. And give us actually, Dick, as I go to pull it up, it occurs to me to ask you that international signal distribution deal that Naira and First announced. What does that entail, and what does it what does it mean for potential handle revenue, etc.?
Yeah, I'm not that familiar. Naira has a subsidiary called Naira Content Management Services. They represent Naira as well as about 20 other racetracks in packaging signals and then selling them nationally and internationally. So they have that, and obviously they have those tracks within their company. And then the Stronach Group parent company has a subsidiary called Global Wagering Systems, I think it is, or Services. And they do similar work. So a lot of it is getting tracks into international venues, be it parimutuel or fixed odds. So when you do fixed odds, you don't really know what the handle is going to be. So usually it's a guess and it's a flat fee. But the more tracks you can package, the better deal that you can make. So I noticed that. I noticed Churchill did something as well. So it looks like college. It kind of looks like college football, Steve. We're going to have, you know, 2-3 big conferences, and that's going to be it.
That's interesting. No, that's an interesting analogy. Yesterday it was being discussed here and there, and I guess the TVG slash, you know, the fan duel racing, that deal does not start until 24.
Fall of next year.
Yeah, so they already have contracts that have to run through and expire, and then these things will kick in, and it'll be a different landscape. Can I say it's going to be better for the viewer? We'll see. Don't know.
Well, to that question, Dick, and I made this point to somebody yesterday. We went through that period. When TVG launched, there were those exclusive, you know, distribution deals, and we had to live through that, where people were, you know, had to literally have three different ADW accounts to be able to, you know, reach, you know, the various racetracks, and that, you know, we outlived that, and you know, when those deals expired, now, I mean, particularly that FanDuel Churchill deal, you know, not that it, in, you know, the Churchill signal's not available on other ADWs, so it's not that, you know, exclusive or, you know, restrictive, you know. But we had kind of gotten away from that. It seemed like we had, you know, we had outlived that era.
Yes and no, though. We did and we didn't, because there's a point of the year when you can tune in Fox Sports and see Churchill, and then there's other times of the year where you're not going to see Churchill. So sometimes you get Naira and you get Oakland, and sometimes you get Naira and Churchill, sometimes you get Churchill on somebody else. So it's still there, and part of it is everyone trying to maximize their product. I can't tune in ABC to watch the Super Bowl on CBS. They have exclusive rights, and I understand that.
Sure.
But it would just be a little bit easier if it were a little bit more broadly based. In other words, if I can't get primary viewing on one channel, could I watch it on a different channel, you know, as a secondary type signal? And like even with the big races, I mean, it looks like Fox is going to do the Belmont eventually the next year, 2024. And it certainly looks like they'll be bidding on the Derby and the Preakness. So where is NBC's role going to be in horse racing? They've already lost the Belmont. They still have the Breeders' Cup. They still have all these lead-up races to the Breeders' Cup. Is NBC going to continue to be a factor? Because NBC Sports Network went the way of the dodo bird, as someone once said. And now they have Peacock, which I actually watch Peacock because I love watching track and field, and they have all these major international track and field events on Peacock, so yeah. Peacock and they had Royal Ascot and things like that. So that's like NBC's secondary network. But all these major networks that tried to have subsidiary sports networks haven't done necessarily well. CBS Sports Network is a non-factor. NBC Sports Network is gone. And Fox Sports still has 1 and 2, but that gets confusing because not every cable system or not every customer has one and then two. So when they switch, they lose the picture. And it's a little frustrating.
Yeah, the question about the Triple Crown does the coverage that's going to be very interesting to track because it's obvious that Fox's interest and their appetite for the game is voracious. They're all in.
Well, and they own 25% of Naira Betts, so they're more than all in. They're a partner.
There you go. They're exactly. Well,
but as an independent voice, I got to say, if they're gonna do Big Races, they got to do better than they did on the Travis. That was not good. No winner's circle presentation.
Explain, Dick, because I mean, having been at the racetrack, I have no idea what you're referring to.
Well, they ran late. Race was 7 minutes late. You know, you're on network. You're on a hard clock. And they ran late for I don't know what reason. And they had to jump out at 5:57. And that was it. No winner's circle presentation. None of the niceties that everyone expects from a big race. So I don't know why they were late.
Interesting. Okay, so I get you. They basically cut away before any of the post.
Yeah, because they didn't have that flexibility that you might have had on Fox Sports. When you're on Fox Network, you got a totally different. So if you're going to have major races on major networks, the clock is king.
All right, let me get some advance on the weekend too, if we could, Dick.
All right, we got back to shot 10, same as last week. Sunday morning, 1 a.m., 10 p.m. Saturday Pacific time. All these people that bet college football, they bet Hawaii and teams like that. You can be watching those games. Watching the first five or six from shot 10, because they run about the same time. Seven turf races, three all-weather, so we get to see our first all-weather races at shot 10 this coming Saturday night. Sunday morning, we'll be back to Happy Valley the same time as today next week, so that's back on schedule. No stake races yet. You know, they gradually build up to a boil. Got some prep races coming up, and noticing today, a lot of high number horses are winning, 11s and 12s and things like that. Now, that doesn't mean they were outside posts. What it means is they were the low weights and the handicaps. So a lot of the low weight hit horses. Now, one of the horses I hit was a class 5 horse running against class 4. But with the weight differential, I thought it had a shot, and it did. So when you look at these races at a glance and you see lots of 1s, 2s, and 3s, those are the highest rated horses that are probably favored. When you see 11s and 12s, those are the lowest rated horses and carry the least weight. So quick way of looking at handicap racing. But, the racing, we get into a nice rhythm of the schedule, start seeing if any trends start emerging and things like that, and hopefully we can be firm, good going for the rest of the year.
Excellent.
We had some arc trials last Sunday, Steve, but none of them were talking about. They were. I don't see any of those horses being factors in the upcoming arc to triumph, which is only, I believe, 2 weeks from Sunday. That's coming up real fast.
Jeez, that means it's going to be October.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it does.
Yeah, right. That the only thing the arc means to me is it's October. That it's like one of those things staring you in the face, like an oncoming truck. And then we'll be back here in Kentucky for Breeders' Cup. very good. Have you played any Kentucky Downstick?
A little bit. A lot of first and thirds and just no luck. I can tell you that right now.
It's tricky.
I'll look at it today. I know that there's firm conditions today. Is the rail down today?
Oh, yeah.
So that seemed to make a big difference with horses that were able to get over to the front on the inside seemed to do well or hung on a long time. So, yeah, I'll take a look at it later today, but I was so wrapped up in the Hong Kong stuff today. Just figured I'd look at that later.
All right. Well, and then you'll have to give me your Masters, your Monday night opinions. I'll be at Presque Isle Monday.
That's great.
The Masters card.
That's great.
It'll be fun.
And one final point about Kentucky Downs and all races in Kentucky. $1 million race is not necessarily $1 million race. In New York, $1 million race is $1 million race, and it could be more than $1 million race. In Kentucky, Al Stahl, Some Like It Hot Brown, they both win major $1 million races, but they didn't get $1 million because one was a German bred and one was a New York bred. So they advertise $1 million, but it's including KPDF money, which is $450,000 in $1 million race. In New York, we do $105,000 for a maiden, plus 20-something thousand New York Bred Awards, but we don't put that into the purse money. Why can't the industry pick one? I'm not saying which one is better, but just pick one and go with it so that everyone can have an apple-to-apple comparison as far as purses.
Until you say that, I mean, and you know, we certainly are aware and what, you know, what KTDF has brought to this is tremendous. And they're promoting, you know, the Kentucky breeding the same as any, you know, as any state program will. But one thing, Dick, actually you bring up that is notable in this, and that is the way, for instance, Equibase tallies earnings. And so, I mean, certain horses under the conditions are eligible to earn more. I mean, it's a very interesting point, Dick. I don't know if I've ever seen it really discussed.
The horse is winning the $1 million race. A Kentucky bred in Kentucky, winning $1 million race is getting, let's say, $600,000 for the win.
Right, right.
A New York bred winning $1 million race in New York is only getting credited for $600,000 for the win, even though it earned probably $620,000+.
Yep.
With the bonuses. So one includes the bonus, one doesn't. So when Al won with Danica in that Philly and Mare race, it was $1 million, but the KPDF award was $450,000. So the purse was $550,000, and he got 60% of the $550,000.
Right.
So the rest reverts. All right, I get it, but it would just be nice if we could all agree on this is how we're going to allocate purse money and promote purse money. Now, at Churchill, I looked at their condition book, the percentage of KTBF money is not as severe as it is, as it is at Kentucky Downs. Now, it'll be pretty high in Keeneland, but it's not the percentage, 45%, like it is.
Maryland is another state that there's monies that are specifically tied to Maryland. Yeah, then there's also the sire, you know, the element of, you know, the sire bonuses that are involved too. It's an interesting. It's not something I really. I mean, we're all aware of it, but it isn't something that you would think of necessarily as a, you know, as a discussion point. But
Well, if I'm New York, I'm never going to have a $100,000 maiden. I'm going to have a $120,000 maiden, and in the fine print it'll say includes $20,000 from
right.
NY Breeding exactly. and Development Fund.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Provocative, Dick. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Dick Fowle, everybody. HKJC. And we're underway this season. We got two of the meetings are already in the books with one shot 10. And...
I think they draw Monday Prescott today, so I will get you my... I'll send you the whole sheet for the races that day.
Super. We'll put yours and Pat Morrell's analysis, and I'll probably look at the late, pick four, pick five type of thing, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, safe trip.
Thanks a lot, Dick Powell, everybody at HKJC.
Steve, as it pertains to Equibase, I believe they do put the actual amount earned, whether it's state money or not. Because I know, like at Parks. You know, we follow you. You look on the chart, and it'll say, let's say the race was a $20,000 race, $12,000 to the winner. But if it's a PA bred, they get an extra 40%. It'll
right.
say they got $16,000 value of race, X amount, and then the winner got $16,000 and change. So their earnings are actually showed that they should be, you know, accurate earnings if you look in the racing form or something.
Well, the. This has come up most often in connection with Pegasus. Pegasus had this unusual, you know, has had these unusual purse conditions mm-hmm. that, you know, with the monies that were, you know, were actually offered, and then the other fees that were distributed
right, were
and
buying, you know, the gate spot in the gate. Yeah,
yeah. You know, and being added into, or, I mean, those don't belong in the earnings.
Right.
That's an artificial, you know, that's an artificially inflated number. So I don't know. It's interesting that, you bring it up.
It's marketing.
It's marketing. Exactly right. And speaking of marketing, certainly, Joe Christofek's analysis for Kentucky Downs has been outstanding and invaluable marketing for Twin Spires. Joe joins us. And Joe, we're going to get a healthy dose of you the next 3 days because I'll be right there, you know, by your corral at the parlay. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Stevie. That's an exciting day. Final day at Kentucky Downs. Been a great meet. You got a beautiful day out there, and as always, some really competitive races. And then opening up at Churchill, Twilight Thursday, forecast looks great. 8 races, full fields, lots to look forward to, including the start of the Road to the Derby and the Oaks on Saturday with the Iroquois and the Pocahontas. So, yeah, fun time of year, and looking forward to seeing you in person tomorrow.
Well, and we'll be coming to you from Churchill to kick things off. And Joe ain't kidding about that card tomorrow to get things going, including a terrific group of maiden 2-year-olds. Well, any kind could be involved in there. And the fifth that's going to start the late pick four. We'll certainly look at this card tomorrow, and then we'll get excited. They'll be drawing today for the big Saturday slate. So we'll... bring you all of that the next couple of days. Kevin Kirstein, who's now a new father, mazel tov to the Kirsteins on the birth of their second child, and looking forward to getting over to the Downs later tonight. And Joe, right now, we're gonna have, I brought this up with Joe Vellante, we are gonna have a very firm turf course here, and there's a lot of these last dozen races today.
Yeah, I would say particularly in the sprints, that's always been the Kentucky Downs profile. You know, when the turf is firm and it's playing, excuse me, evenly inside to outside, which I think we saw, you know, pretty much yesterday, you know, speed usually holds well in the sprints, and you get to a mile and further, and the playing field equals out a little bit because of the undulations and so on and so forth. So that's how I'll be approaching the card again today, looking for a little bit more forward, particularly in the sprints, and maybe up to a mile, and then you know, just letting the best horse prove that they're the best, and the race is further than that.
The other thing that I think plays into it today, you know, particularly with those miles, the horses, there's a few different spots where there's horses that are stretching out from 5 furlongs, 5.5 furlongs, Joe, in their previous starts. And in some cases at this venue, and even the ones that are stretching from 5, 5.5 to 6.5, there's quite a few 6.5 furlong races today. And it occurred to me, a lot of times I'll look at horses when they're making that extra, you know, that extra distance, whether it's a route or whether, you know, they're stretching from, let's say, 5.5 to 6.5, and I'll discount them going a little bit further, but this course might carry them a little further, so they're not as easily, you know, not as easily eliminated from conversation.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that, and that's where I think sometimes pedigree comes into play. You look at the trainers, what their intention is. You know, is this really a 5.5 furlong horse, or is this a horse, you know, particularly when you're looking at the 2-year-olds, that wants to stretch out, you know, to that elongated 6.5, you know, plays more like 7 furlong distance at Kentucky Downs, and, you know, what does their future hold? And that's part of the reason, honestly, Steve, why I find Kentucky Downs so fascinating. I mean, the turf course, how it's playing is going to come into play, you know, stretching these horses out, maybe beyond their means, maybe not. A lot of cutback horses, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of variables in handicapping day-to-day, no matter what the track is, but these are the kind of fun variables that I think I can use to my advantage.
Joe, I looked at races 5 through 12. That's what I wrote up. Before we get into that middle pick 5 and then the late action, anything from the first 4 races that stands out for you today?
Yeah, let me see real quick. I mean, I did pick all the races, and again, the only place you can find them, you know, as far as the race by race selections go, is the Churchill Downs app. Nothing that really stands out to me in the first 4 races. I would say maybe Shady Road in the opener. I don't have the scratches in front of me either, Steve, so I apologize for that. But I actually think race 5 is a great place to start, because I think there's a horse that's tremendously overlaid in the morning line. Race number 5.
Let's dive in. This is a handicap. There actually haven't been too many of these. 3 and ups going the mile.
Yeah, I mean, a Majestic Eagle. I mean, is he really going to be 20-1? I mean, look at the company lines this horse has in his recent races. I mean, you've got the likes of horses that have been really good in California. Hong Kong Harry's been a beast out there. Only got beat 3 lengths to that horse going a mile. And then the turf sprint, look who we lost to. We lost to Brand. That horse has made a huge impression at Kentucky Downs. And the last race was a Long Acres Mile, and that was on dirt. So now he gets back on turf. He fits the condition perfectly. California horses have done okay this meet at Kentucky Downs. And he ran here once, and it was last year in the TVG Stakes going a mile in 70. And he ran a pretty good fourth to Snapper Sinclair that day. And we all know, you know, over the course of time, how much that horse liked it at Kentucky Downs. So I don't know where this 20-1 morning line is coming from. I don't know what kind of price he's actually going to be, but Majestic Eagle is certainly a horse that I'm interested in race 5.
You know, it's funny. I really paused on Majestic Eagle, and it just so happens that Neil Drysdale also has got a runner later on the card. And I thought Drysdale's presence here was very notable, and I did not include Majestic Eagle in this spot, but I did include Drysdale with his other horse. Where is it? St. Anthony in the 10th race with Corrales. But point well made about Majestic Eagle coming out of the Long Acres Mile. And you're right about the 20-1. I thought the 10-1 on Duke of Hazzard was out of whack.
Yeah, and it's tough because I know, man, I made the Kentucky Downs morning line for several years. It's the toughest morning line to make in the country. A, because you've got so many horses. B, because they're coming from so many different venues. This one's out of whack, though, and we've seen a lot of them kind of sort of out of whack during the course of this meet. But it just goes to show you, too, that it's tough and you're going to get the value on the horses you like. Is the credit still in, Steve? I know that horse ran once already to this meet, and I thought he ran great. That was another horse that I was kind of looking at in race five.
In the fifth, he is running. You can, however, a couple of very notable scratches in the fifth. And let me mention, Kentucky Ghost has come out, and so has Price Talk. And both of them were considerations.
Yeah, good. No, that's good to know. I haven't gotten myself up to speed on those scratches yet, but I'm not surprised Kentucky Ghost is out, and I'm scratching them off as you mention them. So, yeah, open fifth race and a great opportunity, I think, with some horses at a price.
Well, and let me give you all four scratches. You can scratch, in addition to the three and the five, Kentucky Ghost and Price Talk, you can also scratch the 12, Bet With Both Hands, and the 1A is out too. Robert Falcone, starting over, has come out as well. So four scratches out of the fifth. Let's go to the sixth, the second leg, and I can tell you, you can scratch all the also eligibles.
Okay, wonderful. I mean, I went to the rail horse, Sousa Summer, talking about, you know, handicapping these races, Steve, and looking at what horse is going to, you know, appreciate the distance that's in front of them. Sousa Summer has been a two-turn horse. The horse has been successful sprinting like we saw at Saratoga last time with an impressive victory. Now he gets, you know, that in-between distance of 6.5 furlongs. Rail post, some tactical speed, should have him up in the game. I've been on some, every time I play Rosario, he takes way back to last and runs third. Every time I don't take him, he gives a great ride. So we'll see what he does on Sousa Summer. I mean, it's been very frustrating for me this meet with him. Great rider, but hopefully he keeps Sousa Summer in a forward position because I think that gives him the best chance to win.
You know, I won't say that I'm against Sousa Summer, but I think there's concern about a regression, and I leaned on too many Twizzlers for Arno Delacour with IRAD. Blinkers come off. I also thought that Blue Norther had a bit of a price look, and I think we might get that 10-1 on Blue Norther with Ray Lou, who's ridden okay here for Johnny Ortiz. Let's go to the maiden special weight, the filly and mare, three and ups. This is the third leg of the middle pick five, and the seventh race goes 6.5 furlongs. You can scratch the 10, Dogwood Smile, Dogwood's Millie Jane, and the 14, Josine, comes out, which gets Red B for Billy Cundiff, will be able to run in here with the 10-pound bug, who I know nothing about, Herforth, the 10-pound bug here. On Red B.
Yeah, Erica wrote a Churchill a little bit. She works for Joe Sharp, and she won with her first ever mount at Churchill, and she's been riding sporadically since. But, riding the Kentucky Downs course is a challenge for a 20-year veteran, let alone a 10-pound bug.
What are we doing in here, Joe?
I like the six. I went with a Mirrorless Kiss on top. Has improved with every start for Steve, and, fell just short last time at Ellis, going 6 furlongs on the dirt behind Respectful by Spikestown. You know, you would think the pedigree's versatile enough. I think the horse will be in a good forward position throughout. Again, there's that man again, Rosario. Hopefully he's better to me on closing day than he's been the rest of the meet. But just progressive, I think in the right spot, should be, like I said, forwardly placed, 7-2 on the morning line. And, you know, most of these races I'm taking 10-12-1 shots, but got to take what the races that give you, and I think this is the most likely winner.
Well, and I'm certainly using a Mirrorless as well, but I also want to get Fiddle on the ticket, the 8.
Yeah, me too. Yep.
Yep. And I respect Shug with the point well taken, but Fiddle to me is the price to fiddle with, and I would have to say that Rosalita is going to have to jump a little higher impact this race. Hey now!
I see what you did there. I just want to add on Fiddle. I got a really good trip note out of the debut. Broke slowly, rushed up, chased the winner home. A beautiful farewell. It was, you know, racing through really hot fractions that day, and Fiddle galloped out great, leading me to believe that the added distance. I got that horse picked second, Steve, and you know, when you're looking for value in a race like this, I think this horse can offer some.
All right, let's dig through and get the late pick five done. The eighth, you can take out AC Expressway, who was making a seemingly a turf switch. So scratch the four. Scratch the 11, Surfer Dude for Dallas. And then Freedom Matters does get in for Safi Joseph, and scratch the other three AEs. The 14, 15, 16 come out. And there's some fairly clear candidates here, but I went to Shug with Chamino. Cloudy, 8-1 appealed to me, and a little Shadow Sphinx for Peter Miller.
Yeah, Cloudy looked pretty good winning last time, was very wide on the turn and was able to get the job done at Ellis. Third race of the form cycle makes sense. I was really interested actually in Dallas's horse that scratched Surfer Dude. I don't see a lot of speed, honestly, in this race, Steve, and we talked about the firm turf and the fact that it could be a little bit forward, particularly in the sprints. I landed on turn of events, Tyler Gaffleone, Joe Sharp off the claim, cutting back from a mile. But you look at those 7-furlong races at Belmont last fall, and they were really good. This horse cuts back, third race of the form cycle, won the first race off the bench at Monmouth. Looks to be a sharp claim, for lack of a better term, there with Joe. And turn of events, 10-1 in the morning line, probably not going to be that kind of price. I would take half of that and be happy with it. But turn of events is one of those cutback horses who's performed well over comparable distances to what he's facing today, and I think is ready to run a big race first off the claim.
Run through the three stakes, Joe, and give us your top play in the Juvenile, the Gun Runner, and the One Dreamer.
All right, so the Juvenile, and again, I don't have the scratches in front of me, but you know, this is a race that was canceled, I believe it was the first Saturday of the meet, and rescheduled. I went with Laver. I think you and I talked about it last time too, Steve. Just the pedigree here, Rusty Arnold, sensational stats with second-time starters, had a very troubled trip on debut, seems to have a ton of upside, and he's running a maiden in the stake race. And really good is really good. At least he was on debut for Maker. So I think those are the two that I'll be leaning on in that race. In the 10th race, I went to the 9 horse on top, Fort Washington, for Shug, coming off a win in the Tail of the Cat at Monmouth. Seems to be rested and ready with some good works at Saratoga on the turf, and most recently Belmont on the dirt. Horse has a nose for the finish line and has run good and has run well in every single race, stands the Penn Mile, where it was a super boggy turf, and I'm not going to hold that one against them. The 11th race, the One Dreamer, I went to the 7 horses, a top pick, Elms. She ran one of the best races of her career, I thought, last out of Colonial, just missing in the Old Nelson, and was far outside as far as the post position goes. She draws better in this race. She's running for the 4th time in this current form cycle, and you know, I think she's going to get the right trip for Mike Stidham and Jose Ortiz. Elms in that race, and that brings us all the way to the finale. And, Steve, that one's for the maiden special eights.
Well, and a quick note, you mentioned Labor. We should bring up the fact that Rusty Arnold and Watts Humphrey have the opportunity to have the siblings win within an hour of each other. Labor in the Juvenile 9th, and then, of course, the other center court product, Navratilova, in the 11th. So you got the half-brother-sister combo in the 9th and the 11th today for George Arnold the second, Rusty. That gets us to the nightcap, and I talked about this earlier with Joe Vellante. What did you do in here? Because this feels like a grab bag.
Yeah, I think so. I got a good note on the 8th, Destine to race for McPeak, who, you know, he won the September title at Churchill last year, and this is really when his barn seems to flourish. September going into October at Keeneland, which we know he always points for. This Destine to race going a mile at Ellis on debut. Broke inwards towards the rail from the rail post, going that tricky 1.5-turn mile distance on the main track. Lost about 6 lengths, was hung 6 wide on the turn, and with the pedigree, the horse is trained well leading up to the debut. Comes back a little bit quick here, but Brian and Kenny, a formidable team, 12-1 in the morning line, took some action on debut. So I expect to run this horse to run a big race again. 12-1 might be a little bit ambitious, but like you said, in a wide open race, Steve, I think we'll get more than a fair enough price.
Excellent. Joe, tremendous help the entire meet. I really appreciate it. We've had a lot of fun. We've cashed a bunch of tickets with you, and we'll see if we can't finish with a bang, and then we'll see if we can't start with a bang Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as the Churchill September season gets going, and I will see you tomorrow at the Downs.
Yeah, always enjoy it, Stephen. In case you haven't heard, there's a sale going on at Keeneland.
Well, we were there yesterday and Monday,
so we're hitting
all the hot spots.
Yeah, lots of hype on the sale. We're doing a little bit of shopping for Brilliant Racing, so we're super excited. Yeah, we're going to buy 3 yearlings and some partnerships, and our partnership is still open. So if anybody out there is interested in, you know, a low-cost way to get involved in the game, just reach out to me on social media. You know, until we buy a horse, the partnership remains open, but super excited about that, Steve. A great time of year with NFL starting, baseball playoffs around the corner, and the sport we love more than any horse racing.
Well, Brilliant Racing, brilliant horseracing.com for Joe and Jason Barkley, right? And I think you have Margo, right? Margo training some?
We use Michelle Level, and we use Greg Foley, our 2 main trainers.
Okay, Greg, there you go. All right. I don't know why I thought. Well, no, Barkley is Franklin. Brian,
yeah, Barkley's
right?
Franklin, and he does some stuff with 10 Strike, et cetera. Yep.
There you go. Well, brilliant horseracing.com, and stop Joe at the Downs and say you want action, you want in. In fact, use Joe's analysis to pay for your share. He's printing money. It's a tremendous it's a parlay.
Well, best laid plans, Stephen. I know you've been involved in horse ownership before, too, so I know you know the feeling. You know, there's nothing like it, and there's a lot of ups and downs in this game and handicapping, wagering, and horse ownership. But when you're right or your horse wins, you know, those are the days we live for.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Joe Krestefek, everybody, and we'll be with Joe. We'll get opinions into the Saturday card, certainly, from him as well. And Scott Shapiro and Scully and Kevin Kirstein and the whole gang. We're putting the band back together for the Churchill season starting tomorrow. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Enjoy your day. Good luck today, Stephen. I'll see you tomorrow.
You got it. Joe Krestefek, everybody. We're going to stay right here. We got about 20 minutes, although Joe Valenti is with us. And, Joe, what time does your phone say?
My phone says 10:40 a.m.
My phone says 10:40 a.m. My laptop says 10:46. This is really strange, actually. I can't imagine why the clocks wouldn't be jibed.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
Yeah. It's very.
I don't know. I'll probably start and restart the computer. I've looked up and I said it can't be 10:45, and then I looked at my phone and it said 10:40. I'm like, what is going on here? All right, Jeff Madey is going to join us from Canterbury. Their season is winding down. They had a very, by the way, speaking of which, they had
Love
a very nice. It's great little track.
Spent one of the best weeks of my racing life with Scott Lake about 20 years ago at the Claiming Crown. There, 2 years in a row we did it. It was just. They love racing, small trade. They do everything they can to promote it.
Yep.
It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
The Sampson family has been, I mean, they've cultivated a live gate, 7,500 typically on their nights, and they've gone out of their way. As we wait for Jeff, let me give you the results from the weekend, because Saturday – they had their Minnesota night, and they've also done. Minnesota has got this interactive program. Speaking of horse ownership, they've got an initiative.
Okay.
I'll send the link out actually for that. But starting in the third on Saturday afternoon and into the evening, the Northern Lights debutante, Lover Girl, and Matt Williams.
That's Theodoro's assistant too. He Matt.
That's out on his own.
Yeah, he has a big string that he oversees for Deodoro and himself. Yeah.
Very nice. This was, of course, the two-year-old group, and nice price, too, 13-1. Lover Girl, $2,880, and this for Gary Bergsrud and Brenda. This is a homebred of theirs. Then came the Midnight Lute Filly, Midnight Current, with Harry Hernandez, a 3-5. Joel Burnt and Bob Lothenbach had a big night, and this four-year-old an easy winner under Hernandez. Then how about Stitzy? This came in the Turf Championship. Stitzy, this Lothenbach and Lothenbach bred English Channel gelding, a six-year-old though that Jose Silva trains for Fifth Street Stables. It's Bob's Business. Bob Lothenbach and Joel Burnt again with Constantino Roman at 2-5. That came in the Futurity, the two-year-old. This a Bolt Doro. Hmm. So Bob Lothenbach bringing some top stallion power to the Minnesota Bred program. In the Sprint Championship, Lothenbach and Burnt again with Ray Eichelberry. This one a 5-2. Second choice, Love the Nest, Blame, out of a congrats mare that Pete Mattson, another big breeder in Minnesota, bred. This in the Distaff Sprint Championship, Charlie's Penny with Eichelberry for Burnt and Lothenbach, another homebred of theirs by Race Day, this filly, the four-year-old. And then Beep Beep Rev Rev, this was a quarter horse stake. Beep Beep Rev Rev, a revenant filly for Jason Olmsted, Summer Run, and then the other quarter horse derby, Relentless Courage. Again, Olmsted and owners Tom Mayer and Paul Ludeman. That was the big night at Canterbury on Saturday, and they're going to finish with a flourish, including some stakes action, as well as a contest tomorrow that we wanted to make people aware of. Jeff Mede, who we have not had a chance to talk to this season. Jeff, good morning.
Steve, thanks for having me on. And that festival night on Saturday was quite a performance for the Burnt Barn. I know that they're thrilled, and Bob Lothenbach certainly has invested in racing in Minnesota, and it really paid off for him. And it's a night where we see Mac Robertson winning all the state bred races, and this year it was Joel and Mr. Lothenbach. So a lot of fun and some very impressive racehorses. That Charlie's Penny is a legitimate run anywhere in the country, filly. So looking forward to seeing what she can do in the future.
Well, and I wanted to take the opportunity actually to slip that in. So the timing was perfect with your visit. And in fact, I put out the, I don't know if people saw the figs that we put out from the other day. Charlie's Penny, 82 buyer, the nice number. And this, in fact, everybody pretty much held up. Including the two-year-olds, 66 and 60 buyers for It's Bob Business and for Lover Girl. And Stitzy is 78 in the Turf Championship, 82 for Midnight Current in the Distaff Turf. And Love the Nest in 87 in that Sprint Championship. So those are numbers that would stand up in any regional program or against open company as well. So. Jeff, talk about
the... It sounds like we'll see Love the Nest. I was talking to Joel this morning, and then he's going to take him down to Hawthorne. There's an allowance race that actually he fits because of his state bred wins here that he can run in. I think it's a non-2 or something allowance. So cool. We'll get to see Love the Nest once more. I think It's Bob Business probably gets put away for the year. But there's a lot of money to be made here with state breds, and I think that's kind of what the approach that Joel and Mr. Lothenbach take is that they're going to focus on the Canterbury meet with the Minnesota Breds and come in with them ready to run like they did this year. So, pretty cool story.
Well, let's give everybody the spotlight on this flourish to round out the season.
Yeah, we've got 35 races to go, 10 tonight, 12 tomorrow, and 13 on Saturday. I think the entries for over those 3 days, 325, something like that, horses entered. So, it's a bit of handicapping. It's a bit of mayhem because, as you know, it's the end of the meet, and a lot of people want to get, a lot of owners especially, want to get one more start in. So they're running horses wherever they can get them in, and it becomes a serious handicapping puzzle. But it's also been some of our biggest handle nights of the year historically in these last nights, at least the last couple of years. So I think it's going to be, there's going to be some monster payouts, and I look forward to the challenge. But it's a bear handicapping.
Before we do any capping, let's also we're actually nicely out in front of tomorrow's contest. Give everybody the details, Jeff, because they can plan on participating in the last handicapping challenge of the year.
Well, we call it the Big Ten BCBC contest, and there are, and kind of like the actual Big Ten conference, there's more than 10 BCBC entries being given away. There's 11. So it makes it the largest Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge qualifier of the year. And it's kind of a it's what I think handicappers now have been kind of accustomed to. $1,000 buy-in, $2,000 live bankroll, win, play, show, exacta, trifecta, daily double wagering, live money. So anything goes using those pools on all 12 of those races on Thursday night. And the top 11 players all earn a $10,000 entry to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. So we had last year was the first year we'd done it. We had right around 100 entries. And there's, so I think we'll get to that number again. There's $120,000 in prizes in being given away. So I'd love to get to 120, but you know, I think that the handle is strong for this contest. You see a lot of the regular contest players that participate in events throughout the year taking part as well. They see it as a pretty good opportunity. So, you know, the live money contests like this one are popular, and, you know, you literally are never out of it. If you've got money left, you can jump right back into the mix. Now, I will say this, that last year we had the 11th place finisher last year finished with $3,100, so turned $2,000 into $3,100. So anyone thinking it's not doable for them, needs to think again, because it is. You know, I was thinking the numbers would be huge, and they weren't. They were, you know, the top, I think the bottom three or four scores were less than doubling the money. So it's something that is approachable. You obviously need to, you know, you need to have a bit of a backbone when it comes to betting, because that is, you know, betting that kind of money can be out of people's normal day-to-day routine. But it's fun, and it's a good opportunity to get to that Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge.
Well, and as you laid out, I mean, if there's 100 and there's 11 seats to be punched, you're talking about a ridiculous ratio and a unique opportunity. And it's not just at Canterbury, everybody. You can play on TVG or at ExpressBet. So wherever you are, this is your opportunity to buy in and, you know, maybe partner up with a friend, and the two of you come at it, you know, split the $3,000 buy-in. But this is as good a ratio opportunity, and frankly, you're running out of racetrack to qualify for BCBC.
Yeah, I think that the timing is right for this too. As you're right, there's a lot of people that don't want to put up the $10,000 to get into BCBC, but are willing to, you know, to put up the $1,000 plus their $2,000 bankroll and use their handicapping skills to maybe get there. So it is a really good opportunity. You're right, and that's, you know, we launched the contest last year and had some success with it. And it was a good talking point for us, you know, throughout the meet. I think we've held theaters in various places up to it. So it's had people looking at our races and playing our races. So I think, you know, as selfishly as a marketing tool, just for the entire meet, it's been a great endeavor as well. And it's just, I love these contests. We've been running live money contests now for 26 years. So it's fun. The group of people that take part either online or coming to the track and playing, it's just fun to get together and see them all playing. And so it's something I look forward to, handicapping contests each and every year.
The Big Ten handicapping tournament tomorrow, TVG, ExpressBet, or make your way to Shakopee and enjoy the action right on the racetrack. Win, play, show, exacta, try, and double. Those are the format for the 12 race card, and you know they're not just going to give you $10,000 because you are going to face off against some of the best players that we know. Last year's, all you have to do is look at last year's results when you see names like Anthony Matera, Tony Joe, Brian Schenvert, Vic Stauffer, Howard Krevitz, Dick Girardi. I mean, this was a pretty glittering leaderboard from last year.
Yeah, there's a lot of big names at play, and they're you know, it's fun to see them in there. And they a lot of these players have over the years, even before when it was just brick and mortar contests, before ADW wagering, would travel to Canterbury to play in a contest, yep. Another one that we've been doing for years. So it's fun. It's a great chance, and you know, I look forward to seeing these people because it's a great, as you know, the handicapping, kind of large, they're all just a blast to be able to spend time with.
Well, looking ahead, and there are some stakes as well as you close out the season, and I'm going to pull up this card. You know, this is a straightforward card tomorrow for the contest, and, you know, especially the second half of the slate, you know, 10-horse field, 12-horse field for a claiming group, Minnesota Bred Allowance in the eighth, sprinting 12-horse field, maiden special, going short on the dirt, 9-horse field, another claimer with this one's got 10. How about 6.5? The 11th race, 11 horses. So you got nice size fields, and you would imagine that that'll produce some nice prices. Talk about the stakes to close out the season as well.
Yeah, we run two stakes at the end of the year, the Shakopee Juvenile, which is for 2-year-olds, and you know it's obviously too close to our big Minnesota Bred 2-year-old race that we held this last Saturday, so we won't see any Minnesota Breds in there, at least not the stakes quality ones that would have been running for $100,000. But it's a good chance for 2-year-olds to get it, you know, the best 2-year-olds to have a chance to run, and that's always been, you know, kind of the conundrum, I think, at tracks that run a shorter meet like we do, that especially at this time of the year, that if you break your maiden with a 2-year-old in June, it's hard to get a non-winner at 2 race to go, so there really isn't any option for you to run in. And that, so we've been, I think this race here at least gives you a chance to, you know, for guys like Mac Robertson and others that have those kind of horses to come out and run. So I do like the placement of that race. And then the other race is one that was named for Mr. Tom Metzen, who was the head of the Minnesota HBPA for years, and it's a stake for non-winners of a stake race. So you can get a good group of kind of salty campaigners in there too. And they're races I look forward to because it's always nice to be able to honor some of these people at the end of the meet. But overall, that closing day card is going to be a lot of fun.
Jeff Madej, everybody, CBY Track Flack, and a big flourish to finish up the season at Canterbury Park, the Big Ten contest. Get registered, get set for tomorrow, TVG, Express Bet, or at Live at the Track. Jeff, thanks for everything this season, and finish big.
Well, I appreciate it. I always appreciate your attention that you pay to Canterbury Park, and the support that we've had just throughout the meet from the racing fan base as well has been great. It's an honor to be able to put this stuff out there and to talk about it on occasion. So I appreciate all your support.
Not at all. Jeff Madej, everybody, and the entire team, Andrew Offerman and the racing department, of course, as well, and the Sampson family that just done a fabulous job, Canterbury Park. And we'll remind everybody again tomorrow about the contest. We got about 3 minutes to close out the morning. I just want to get Hammer in here for a wave goodbye because Hammer's got to head out and unfortunately wasn't able to come by the last couple of days. And as Casey gets Hammer, Joe, thanks for hanging out. This was so much fun.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll be following you to Churchill. Curious to see what that paddock looks like.
Well, I think there's going to be mounds of dirt and girders and little else, frankly. But, right? I don't think they're that far along.
No.
No. So it's going to be very, very – actually, I hadn't even thought about that until you brought it up. The good point. The what's going to be a completely new fashion. I mean – one thing I am grateful that I was able to be at Churchill in an era going back to the late 90s is when I first started going to Churchill. And so I have seen that the transition. And I can really remember, you know, the old building, the old paddock, and the crowded nature of what a Derby day was like in the 90s.
Now the expansion is just
amazing.
Crazy.
Just crazy what they've done. It's gotten so much
easier.
I went
there for a Thanksgiving dinner one time. My daughter was at UK, and the whole family went down there to dinner, and it was 40,000 people all eating in different
rooms.
Rooms.
Exactly.
No one was outside. Everybody's in the rooms.
Listen, somebody had, you know, somebody had to go have a stuffing. We got Hammer. Going to get very tight here on time. It's got about a minute now. thank Hammer for this. So, no? All right. I'll thank everybody that participated in the meet business-wise. As I tweeted this morning, thanks to Ron Winchell, who really has elevated the whole profile, in him and his team, and the KTDF, and Jenny Reese churns out the info and keeps it high on everybody's attention span for these 2 weeks. If you haven't been here, try to make a plan to come for next year. There'll be another 7-day meet, and we'll be back. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM, coming up later in the archive and the pod. And we'll talk to you from Churchill Downs tomorrow morning. Talk to you then.